Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, November 11th. I'm Olivia Rose. A derelict vessel is no longer drifting unmanned in the waters of the Wrangell Narrows near Petersburg. The borough's harbor department was monitoring the Valkyrie, a 36-foot fiberglass troller, for months. But yesterday morning, it drifted too close for comfort in the town's middle harbor after traveling a few miles overnight. Harbormaster Glorianne Wolin says that's when the department decided to deal with the hazard.
It will continue to be a problem. It'll be a navigation issue as well as, littering the beaches. So we'll get it out. Because if I let it go, it's a hazard.
Earlier this fall, the Valkyrie broke loose from its mooring buoy in Scow Bay during a storm. Pollutants eventually started to leak out from the vessel while beached on Kuprinoff Island, so it got cleaned out by a salvage company, but wasn't removed. Wolin says the vessel had been floating all around Scow Bay, a few miles south of town, until the tide took it up through Libby Strait. For miles, it drifted in the dark of night to town and eventually into Middle Harbor yesterday morning. A derelict vessel drifting in the water, slowly sinking, and entering the harbor poses a number of hazards for both the harbor and mariners. Staff managed to get it out of the harbor, latch on, and pump out the water. It remained tied up in North Harbor until the tide would let staff ground it at Scow Bay. Wolin says the derelict vessel Valkyrie is slated for permanent removal.
Hopefully working with Public Works, we'll get it out at minimal cost. Because we're going to do it in-house, but then it's the price tag the bailer puts on it because that's what, they'll have to ship it out. So they'll come up with a cost and then that's budgeted for and mortgage holders have to pay for it. Sadly, that's who ends up, footing the bill for things, the rule abiders.
Demolishing and disposing of derelict vessels costs thousands of dollars. The borough adopted new laws about inactive vessels last winter. Now, borough code requires vessels to leave port for at least 24 hours in a year. If they don't, then they'll have to pay for moorage and another fee for storage. Wolin says she hopes any extra income generated from boats that don't move could help mitigate the issue with derelict vessels in Petersburg.
Vessels that don't move turn into these kind of situations after a while, and so I'm trying to nip that in the bud before it before they become a problem.
Wolin reminds vessel owners to tell her office when they leave their assigned stall so they don't get charged double the mortgage rate as the first one-year mark comes in January. Cruise ships are relatively new to Prince of Wales Island in Southeast Alaska, and not all residents are happy to have them. KRBD's Sydney Dauphiné went to a tourism meeting in Craig last week and has this report.
About 20 community members spoke to City of Craig leaders at a town hall in the high school's auditorium, sharing concerns about the future of rising tourism on the island. The gathering was hosted by the city's new Tourism Advisory Committee, which was formed about 2 months ago. Mayor Casey Smith said it has been contentious at best. 5 members of the board were appointed rather than elected, and 2 have since stepped down.
And there was a lot of opposition that we started the committee too early. We should have done something like this in the community outreach. Well, we don't have much time. We only got another 6 months.
Resident Andy Deering calls himself a tourism refugee. He and his wife have lived in Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan before they moved to Prince of Wales almost 20 years ago. He said they saw each town taken over by tourism. That's why they left. They don't want that to happen to Craig.
And so we've been all over the world and we've seen what happens when big, industrial tourism comes to a place. It does take over. It really does. And we were doing everything we can to try to prevent it from happening in Craig.
Residents said the town's infrastructure is not built for thousands of people, which can show up on just one ship. Sidewalks are scarce, intersections are staggered, and there aren't any stoplights. And many people like it that way. They don't want to be inundated by money coming in from other communities or get pushed out by rising costs. Deering said even though there are economic benefits to tourism, that shouldn't be the most important factor in making decisions about it.
Because my quality of life is not for sale, and at any price, because I'm here because I love the quality of life here in Craig.
Other town hall attendees see cruise ship tourism as something to get ahead of and manage so it doesn't take over. Craig City Council member Chanel McKinley said they need to set rules in place for tourism now so the community isn't undermined by big businesses.
And for tourism, when it comes, because it will come, that we have a good stronghold in place to where we still feel like we have a stronghold in our community.
The cruise ships that have been harboring in Kluwak on the western side of the island, with tourists coming to Craig, have been relatively smaller ships, with capacities of around 1,000 people. Craig isn't a port town and doesn't have a headcount tax, like Ketchikan or Juneau. There aren't many storefronts or restaurants for tourists to spend their money, so the direct profit is limited. But the number of ships that are coming to Prince of Wales is rapidly increasing. There were 6 ships that docked at Port Kluwak in 2024, and this last summer, there were nearly 24 ships. Next year, they're expecting almost 60. Craig Mayor Casey Smith said that's why he felt they needed to start a committee and get ahead of things like charter fishermen coming in with tourists and competing with local commercial fishermen.
Those are things that are going to be looked at that are out of our control in Craig. I mean, basically, the only thing we can do is go back and respectfully ask the cruise ships, you know, this is what our community wants and this is what it wants to look like.
Smith said the city has been trying out an access permit program for tourists to use trails, and it also lets the city generate revenue to maintain them. And he wants to hear other input, too. The board and town hall attendees seem to agree that going forward, the most important thing is to get community input through a questionnaire mailed to all residents. With reporting in Craig, I'm Sydney Dauphiné.
The state of Alaska is limiting payments to SNAP recipients this week in response to federal guidance. As recently as Friday, state officials were preparing to fully refill SNAP debit cards. But then, over the weekend, after the Supreme Court stepped in to stop a lower court ruling, the federal government told states they could only issue a total of 65% of the monthly benefit. President Trump threatened financial penalties if states did not comply. So the roughly 66,000 Alaskans on SNAP will still be short of what they were expecting for this month. Division of Public Assistance Director Deb Etheridge says the shortfall is the result of shifting instructions from the federal government.
We're here and we're ready and we're working really hard through the weekends to make sure that we can get the benefits out as soon as possible.
By Wednesday, she says people who were eligible for a November 1st SNAP payment will have 65%, about 2/3, of their usual benefits. But that'll still leave the average household hundreds of dollars short, according to state data. Etheridge says the state had hoped to fill the gap with state dollars freed up by disaster declaration issued by Governor Mike Dunleavy last week. But she says the shifting guidance from the courts and the Trump administration has complicated the state's efforts to get those state dollars to SNAP recipients' debit cards. The SNAP reductions are part of the Trump administration's response to the government shutdown, and the government appears to be on the verge of reopening. Etheridge says that, assuming the federal government moves quickly once it reopens, beneficiaries could have their cards refilled in, quote, a matter of days. Haines, like the rest of Alaska, relies heavily on food that's grown far away, preserved as much as possible, and then shipped north. But a new farm in the Chilkat Valley is working to chip away at that reality. This year, that meant nearly 3,000 pounds of fresh produce for locals, and as Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, hopes are even higher for next year.
Just off Main Street, in Haines, a large field sits in the shadow of Mount Rapinski. For a few years, that land sat empty. And during that time, local Liz Landis says she'd look at it and think,
why isn't that full of food? Look at it, it's glorious.
Now it's teeming with food, or at least it was earlier this fall on a walk through the rain-soaked property with Landis at the tail end of the harvest season.
This is leeks. There was also fennel, a couple kinds of kale, and bunching onions here. To the left are strawberries. Beyond that are asparagus and wormwood.
The effort is a bright spot for the local food system, and more broadly for Southeast Alaska, which relies heavily on food that's shipped in from incredibly far away. That process results in less fresh, nutritious produce, Landis says, and leads to extraordinary amounts of waste. As she sees it, nothing encourages cutting down on waste more than toiling in the soil week after week. She points to some healthy-looking purple cabbages, which she says require a lot of time and effort to grow.
That's amazing. I'm going to use every freaking leaf of every cabbage that I harvest. And the pieces that I can't are going to go into compost to make my cabbages next year.
This year was the farm's first full season. As of early November, seeds planted on about 3/4 of an acre had yielded more than 2,800 pounds of food, and counting. Landis says there will be greens to glean through the first snowfall. All of the produce was shared throughout the community, either for work trade or for free. A significant chunk of the produce goes to the farm's volunteers and contractors. But it also goes to the local senior center, a food pantry in Clukwan, a food hub in Mosquito Lake, and other community groups, like volunteer firefighters. Landis says that's one of the best parts of the job.
Generally, I got to go around and be the little vegetable fairy and say, thank you for the time that you give to other people. Here's a bag of peas.
The operation is far from easy, but the farm is in somewhat of a sweet spot when compared to other parts of the Chilkat Valley and Southeast more broadly, Landis says. Taken together, the area's workable soil, Alaska's long summer days, and Haines' relatively dry and warm climate are a big help. In June, she says she had
4-inch shivering, sunburned, cold, wind-whipped starts. And I came back exactly 2 months later. They had these big, beautiful cabbages, and they've been hauling out cauliflower for weeks, and they've lost track of how many cucumbers have grown. It's 2 months. I can't even believe that.
Looking ahead to next year, Landis says she wants to continue recruiting more volunteers and potentially expand the growing area to a full acre. She also has a more specific personal goal.
Because I want to make the first all-Alaskan gumbo.
She says, will depend largely on how the okra, which grows well in hot, dry climates, does next year. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
Fishing jobs in Alaska are down for the 5th year in a row. That's according to new economic data from the State Department of Labor for the year 2024. Seafood harvesting jobs dropped about 7.5% last year, about the same as the year before. That brings the industry to its lowest job count since records began in 2001. The report's author, Joshua Warren, says there are many reasons for the drop.
There's increased costs, competition in international markets, dropping prices. A lot of different things can cause someone to choose to fish or not to fish.
Warren says climate change is another major factor, bringing unpredictable runs and fishery closures for different species and regions of the state. The report doesn't reflect this year's tariffs, but notes the U.S. has been losing ground in global seafood markets for years. Warren says the numbers fit a decade-long trend. Seafood harvesting jobs have fallen by more than a third since 2014. The pandemic caused the biggest losses, but unlike most Alaska industries, the seafood sector hasn't bounced back. He says crab was the only bright spot that seems to have rebounded from recent closures, but that all other species are still seeing declines. And while he's not optimistic that jobs will rebound to previous levels, he says the industry overall is pretty stable.
I don't think I'm terribly worried there won't be fishing in the future. I think it's pretty resilient, and we're just seeing a lot of negative factors right at the moment.
The very end of the year did see modest job growth, but Warren says it's too soon to tell if that trend continued into the current year. For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.